First Chronicles chapter 29, verses 10 through 17. David praised the Lord in the presence of the whole assembly, saying, "Praise be to you, O Lord, God of our father Israel, from everlasting to everlasting. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor, for everything in heaven and earth is yours. Yours, O Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all. Wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things. In your hands are strength and power to exalt and give strength to all. Now, our God, we give you thanks and praise your glorious name. But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? Everything comes from you, and we have given you only what comes from your hand. We are aliens and strangers in your sight, as were all forefathers, all our forefathers. Our days on earth are like a shadow without hope. O Lord our God, as for all this abundance that you have provided for building you a temple for your holy name, it comes from your hand, and all of it belongs to you. I know, my God, that you test the heart and are pleased with integrity. All these things have I given willingly and with honest intent. And I have seen with joy how willingly your people who are here have given to you." The Fort Worth Star-Telegram tells the story of a South Carolina priest who in 2009 barely missed the $1 million prize in a poker tournament hosted by PokerStars.net. It was called the $1 Million Challenge. And the Reverend Andrew Trapp said he entered the tournament to give viewers, and I quote, "a fun twist on their perceptions of the priesthood, and to put St. Michael's Catholic Church super close to its $5.5 million fundraising goal for their new building." The top prize, however, went to New York retired police detective Mike Kazowski. But Reverend Trapp, he did take second place, and he won a $100,000 untaxed prize for the church, which still could not reach its financial goals even after years of fundraising. Funding the church through gambling. And we wonder why people have such negative attitudes when it comes to the church and money. I can assure you I've never participated in a poker tournament, and I have no plans to do so. Well, today we're beginning a life-changing sermon series called The ABCs of Financial Success, Financial Freedom. I want to tell you, this could be a great day in the life of our church. It might very well be a great day in your life as well. And though some of you might not like it when the church talks about money, this series is incredibly important. We are still recovering from the worst American recession since the Great Depression in 1929. Unemployment rates are still dangerously high around this country, in our community as well. Foreclosures are still at unbearably high levels. I have some friends looking for a home, and if I understood them correctly, they said there are still 30 pages of foreclosures here in Mesa County. Many homes, as you are fully aware, are worth far less than what people owe on them. And with the financial struggles that many of our own families here at Northeast are still experiencing, and a continuing economic uncertainty, this series on financial freedom is actually long overdue. I do want to challenge you to consider being here for the whole series, not just this morning, but each of the next 4 weeks. And I want to lay out a map of where we're headed. Today, week one, we're going to be talking about our attitude. That's what we're talking about today, how to live in such a way that God will bless our finances. Number two, bondage. It is, after all, the ABCs, A, B, C, and D, in fact. Bondage, how to get out of debt and stay out of debt forever. Week number three is choice. And in the sermon on choice, we're going to take a look at who's behind our financial struggles and how to solve them. And then the fourth week, decision. That is, what is the most important step on the road to freedom? Now, I would suggest to you this is all very important because the average American is deeply in trouble when it comes to money and finances. Now, the average American doesn't know it, but the average American is in deep trouble when it comes to finances. And talking with many folks, I'd say the average American doesn't really believe it that they're in trouble, because as long as they're making monthly payments, they don't have a problem with their finances. As long as they can fill up the tank with gas, then they don't have a problem with their finances. As long as they can go out to eat once in a while, then they don't have a problem with their finances. As long as they can go to an occasional movie or concert or other form of entertainment, then they don't have a problem with their finances. As long as they can go get their hair done or their nails polished, they don't have a problem with their finances. But just like the alcoholic, the drug addict, the gambling addict, the porn addict, the sex addict, they can proclaim with confidence, "I don't have a problem." And yet everybody around them knows that they have a problem. They don't recognize that everyone around them knows that they have a problem, but everyone around them knows that they have a problem. And the fact is that the average American has a problem, a serious problem when it comes to our finances. And even among Christians, oftentimes we have a serious problem when it comes to our finances. Houston, we have a problem. And a lot of people, because they're in denial about their money problems, they are in serious danger when it comes to their money, and they don't even know it. They don't even know they have a problem. In the book written a few years ago called Mind Over Money, father and son authors Ted and Brad Klontz make several statements that underscore the problem of denial when it comes to money. According to the authors, the idea that your financial difficulties are your fault is the big lie about personal finance. They say it's not really your fault. It's not your problem. I tell you, I'm not making this stuff up. I'll share a few quotes with you. On page 1, this is what it says. And I quote, "The accusation that your financial difficulties are your fault and stem from being lazy, crazy, greedy, or stupid is the big lie about personal finance." End quote. That's on page 1. And it just gets worse from there. They have a chapter in their book called The Zoo in You. And they talk about what's actually going on inside of you is you have a crocodile and a monkey and a scientist who live inside of you. And they share this quote, "When it comes to money, more often than not, our impulses are our emotions. Our inner crocodile and inner monkey, not our inner scientist, is running the show." They say it's not your fault. It's somebody else's fault. Really? You're not running the show? You're not in charge? No, it's your inner crocodile running the show. Now, judging on book sales, I'm willing to bet that they've sold thousands and thousands and thousands of this book. It's saying that we're not responsible for our money problems, or blaming them on an inner crocodile or monkey or even an inner scientist, is about as crazy as the guy who a few years ago tried to sue McDonald's and Burger King and KFC for making him obese. Did you hear about that story? You know, instead of blaming everyone else for our problems, wouldn't it make more sense just to go about trying to find the solution to the problem? And part of the solution I want to suggest to you this morning is that it deals with our attitude when it comes to money, our attitude when it comes to our material possessions. We need to ask God for His help with our finances. But here's the problem. When you suggest to someone that they have a problem with their finances and they're not ready to hear that, they're likely to get offended and get mad instead of get real. Why? Well, we're all a little touchy when it comes to our finances, to our money, aren't we? There's a story of a farmer named Stumpy and his wife, Martha. And every year they would go to the state fair, and Stumpy would say to his wife, "Martha, I'd like to take a ride in that there airplane." And Martha would say, "Well, I know, dear, but that there airplane ride costs $50. And $50 is $50. Well, one year came along, and Stumpy told his wife, "Honey, I'm 71 years old, and I'm not getting any younger. And if I don't ride in that there airplane this year, I may never get another chance." And once again, Martha replied, "Well, I know, dear, but that there airplane ride costs $50. And, well, $50 is $50. Well, the pilot overheard their argument, and he made a proposal to them. And he said, "Folks, I'll make you a deal. I'll take both of you up. And if you can remain completely silent the entire ride, not a peep, not a sound, not a scream, not a yell, then you don't owe me $50. But if I take you up in the ride and you do make a peep or a sound or a yell or a scream, then you owe me $50. Well, Stumpy and Martha, they liked the proposal, and so up they went. And the pilot, of course, he tried all types of things that he could. He, you know, did twists and turns and rolls and dives, but not a word was heard from either of them. And so the pilot continued. He did all the tricks that he could do over and over and over again, but still not a sound. Well, finally, the pilot was frustrated, realizing he was going to be out $50, and he landed the plane. He turned around to look at the couple, but he was surprised to only see the farmer sitting in the airplane, and he said, "Stumpy, where is your wife? Where is she? What happened? Why didn't you say anything?" And Stumpy replied, "Well, by golly, I was going to say something when she came loose, but goodness gracious, $50 is $50. We're pretty touchy when it comes to our money. But I'm going to assume that you're not going to be touchy during the next 4 weeks of this sermon series. I'm going to assume that you really want God's wisdom and God's guidance and God's provision in your life. I'm going to go a step farther and assume you really do want to get out of the burden of debt that you may have in your life. And once and for all, be debt free. Free of the albatross of the burdens of finances and bills and bondages." And friends, these messages in this series can transform your life forever if you will check your attitude, if you will approach these and listen with an open heart and an open mind to God's wisdom when it comes to money. So the first thing I want to do is take a look at our attitude about money. In 1 Chronicles 29, 10 through 17, which we opened with today, the author King David, he does a couple things. First of all, he acknowledges the sovereignty of God. The power of God, the control of God, the rule of God over everything he has. 1 Chronicles 29:11 says, "Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor. For everything in heaven and earth is yours. Yours, O Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all." He continues and he acknowledges that all the money, all our material things, they come from God, not us. Verse 12, he says, "Wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things. In your hands are strength and power to exalt and give strength to all." King David has the right attitude about money. Everything we have belongs to God, not us. And everything we have earned comes from God, not us. Now, unfortunately, many of us have been taught a little bit differently. Many of us have grown up with some ideas about money, wrong attitudes about money. And so this morning, I want to share with you three lies about money that sound like truth. So the first lie about money that sounds like truth: all the church talks about is money. You've heard that one, haven't you? You go to invite a friend or family member or coworker to church, and they say, "No, I don't want to go. All the church does is talk about money. All the church talks about is money." And that's a lie. People who go to church know that's a lie. Thinking people know that's a lie. The reality is the church doesn't talk enough about money and how to handle money and money management. That's the reason that our society is in the problem that it is in today. As a society, as individuals, as families, the church doesn't talk enough about money. Even though Jesus made money management front and central to spiritual maturity. In the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew chapter 6, verse 21, Jesus says, "Where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So you get your money in the right place, you get your attitude in the right place, and your heart will follow. The fact is that Christians are often just as bad at money management as everybody else. And even though we have the truths that should make us the best money managers in the world, sometimes we don't follow through. The fact is that the work of the church is severely underfunded when the church ought to be the best funded organization in the world. God never intended His storehouse to be a poorhouse. Lie number two, that sounds like a truth: money and material things can satisfy me. We know that's true. We know that they will not satisfy us. We know that in our heads. We see lots of people on the news and on the internet and around society that have plenty of money and plenty of things, and yet they're still miserable, right? We know in our heads that this is a lie, and yet we live and act and feel like this is the truth. We live with the assumption that money and material things can satisfy us and sustain us and give us happiness and deliver us from our struggles and maybe even burdens and sin. But this is just another lie that we tell ourselves. But sadly, it's the premise of the consumer culture that we find ourselves in. Advertisers would tell us just that, that the things they want to sell us would satisfy us, that a new car or new clothes or new homes or new technologies, that those will make us happy. They will satisfy our deepest needs. That's what the world tells us. But the wisest man who ever lived, and incidentally the wealthiest man who ever lived, King Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 5, 10 and 11, "Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them?" How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. Church, we must change our attitude. Money and material things will never satisfy us. Lie number three. It's my money and I can do whatever I want with it. That's what people say, isn't it? I've said it. I've heard some of you say it. I was sitting at an establishment this week and I was, overhearing a gentleman talk to a friend, and he said, "It's my money and I can do whatever I want with it. No one can tell me what to do with it." And as he was saying those very words, I was studying over these words. The truth is that everything we have comes from God, and we are simply managers. We are simply stewards of everything we have. It doesn't belong to us. We are not the creator. It all belongs to God. Everything that exists belongs to the one who made it. Psalm 24:1 says, "The earth is the Lord's, and everything in it, the world and all who live in it." 1 Chronicles 29:14, we just read it, but we'll read it again. "Everything comes from you. We've given you only what comes from your hand." Listen to these words from Luke chapter 12, verses 16 and following. Jesus' words about the rich fool. And as I read these words, I'm fairly certain many of you will picture someone in your mind. "And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I've no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I'll store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God.'" We need to change our attitude about money. Everything we have is on temporary loan from God. It is not our entitlement. It is a privilege. It is our privilege to be faithful managers of the money and the material things God gives us for the time that we own them, or the time that we are alive on this earth. So three lies about money that sound like truth. Well, I also have three truths about money that sound like lies. And in fact, as I cover these over the next few moments, many of you are going to think, "There's no possible way that that could be true. It can't be." But I want to tell you, the Bible says it is true. And those of you who have chosen to manage your money in godly ways have discovered these are true. Obedience precedes understanding. So truth number one, God is the one who determines how much money I earn. I don't determine how much money I earn, ultimately. My boss doesn't determine that. God determines how much money I earn. Deuteronomy chapter 8, 17 and 18 says this, "You may say to yourself, 'My power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me.' But remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you the ability to produce wealth." Who gives you the ability to be successful? God gives you the power and the ability to be successful. In the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 6, again, verse 31, Jesus says, "But seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." So who will give you everything you need? God will give you everything you need. We need to change our attitude about money. I need to change my attitude about money. My career doesn't determine how much money I make. My employer doesn't determine how much money I make. It's not my hard work, not my brilliance, not my creativity that determines how much money I make. The stock market doesn't determine how much money I make. The economy, the government does not determine how much money I make. God is the one who determines how much money I earn. It's a truth that we need to embrace. God is the one who determines this. Truth number two, that sounds like a lie. God has the power to dry up my income at His discretion. God has the power to shut down my company, shut down my business, my job, dry up my income at a moment's notice, at His discretion, and potentially in relationship to my obedience or disobedience regarding the money and material things He's given me. Jesus shares these words in Luke chapter 12, verse 48, in context about money. From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been trusted with much, much more will be asked. There's a story in the Old Testament, Daniel chapter 4, verses 28 through 37. The king of the greatest empire on earth at the time, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, he is surveying the vast wealth, the power of his kingdom. He's gloating about his royal glory and reveling in his majestic power. But he is instantly deposed by a miraculous and mighty act of God. The Bible says in that passage, God humbles the proud. And God cursed King Nebuchadnezzar with some kind of psychotic break that sends him running for the wilderness, acting like a wild animal, eating grass like cattle. God took it all away from him. He took away his prestige, his power, his money, the material things, the respect and dignity of royalty. He took it all away because his heart, his attitude was unrighteous. It was wrong before God. Now at the end of his life, King Nebuchadnezzar, when he has been reconciled, he says, I praise the Most High. I honored and glorified Him who lives forever. I praise and exalt and glorify the King of Heaven because everything He does is right. His ways are just. We need to change our attitude about money, about the material things that we have. We don't need to worry about the economy or the stock market as much as we need to focus on living our lives with the right priorities, in the right manners, in ways that will honor God and be obedient to Him. Proverbs 3, 9 and 10. Once again, wealthy and wise King Solomon says, honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing and your vats will brim over with new wine. Put God first and He will take care of you. Truth number three, that sounds like a lie. Giving to God is the only way out of my financial problems. Giving to God is the first and foremost way out of your money problems. Now, instantly, I know many of you in the room. I knew it. We waited long enough, and there was the bait and switch. I knew it. He's a preacher. He's got to say you have to give to God. But I can tell you, when we obey His commands and give generously, God comes through. I can tell you from my own life, it is true. God promises to bless those who obey His commands and give generously. Luke chapter 6, verse 38, talking about a number of topics, Jesus says, given it will be given to you. A good measure pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. In Proverbs 11, verse 24, Solomon again says, one man gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. Sadly, the first thing that people oftentimes do when they have financial problems is they stop giving to God. And friends, that is insane. They see giving to God as a discretionary expense. And so when things get tough, they cut off the most important part of the equation, the blessing of God. Instead of cutting off their cable or their internet or adjusting their cell phone plan or perhaps not eating out as often or adjusting some hobbies, they cut off the wellspring of God's blessing because they stop giving to God. They stop priming the pump, so to speak. This note was found stuffed inside of a baking powder can that was wired to the handle of an old pump that offered the only hope of drinking water on a very long and seldom used road across Nevada's Amargosa Desert. The note on the pump read this, and I quote, this pump is all right as of June 1932. I put a new sucker washer in it, and it ought to last 5 years, but the washer dries out and the pump has to be primed. Under the white rock, I buried a bottle of water out of the sun. There's enough water in it to prime the pump, but not if you drink some first. So pour about a quarter in and let her soak enough to wet the leather, and then pour in the rest, medium fast, and pump like crazy. You'll get water. The well has never run dry. Have faith, and when you get all watered up, fill the bottle and put it back where you found it for the next feller. Signed, Desert Pete. P.S. Don't go drinking the water first. Prime the pump, and you'll get all you can hold. Well, sadly, in an attempt to meet our immediate needs, we often rob ourselves of the provision for all our needs. 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6, the Apostle Paul writes this, "Remember, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, but whoever sows generously will also reap generously." You might be saying, well, what is Paul talking about? Well, I'll tell you what he's talking about. He is talking about being generous and being blessed to a church in Corinth that's struggling to be generous, but still wants to be blessed. And the right attitude is knowing that God is the one who owns it all. God is the one who distributes it all. It is really not your business. It is really not your company. It is really not your career that make you successful. It is really not your ability or your work ethic. There are many great people in this world with phenomenal abilities and work ethic that never figure out financial freedom. It is not your brilliance or your charisma. It is your God who provides. And it begins and ends with the blessing of God. And until we get that right, nothing else that we try is going to work. We must change our attitude. We have to begin trusting God, obeying God, giving faithfully, systematically, and sacrificially each week when we get together. God promises to move us toward financial freedom when we take that kind of step, when we trust Him, when we adopt that kind of attitude. Friends, you'll never spend your way to financial freedom. A new car or new clothes or an exotic vacation will only make you feel great for a few hours or even a few days. You'll never borrow your way to financial freedom. A home consolidation or a home loan or consolidation loan or that sort of thing, they will not get you to financial freedom. You'll never cheat your way to financial freedom. Well, I won't report all my income. I'll lie to the IRS. You will never steal your way to financial freedom. I'll falsify my business accounts. I'll cheat my place of business. You will never beg your way to financial freedom. Cardboard sign and a magic marker or bumming off of family or shaming the church into helping you. You won't gamble your way to financial freedom. Heading to Vegas or Atlantic City or buying lottery tickets, you will not gamble your way to financial freedom. The only way to financial freedom is to trust what God says about money management and giving generously and faithfully and to go out and do it. That's the first step on the road to financial freedom. To change our attitudes. Acknowledge the sovereignty, the power, the ability of God in our finances. Ohio Congressman Bob McCune shares this story about taking his son to McDonald's and buying him a large fry. And as they sat down at the table and the congressman reached across to get a fry, his son pulled the fries back from him. And in that moment, the congressman thought to himself, doesn't my son realize I'm the one who gave him those fries? Doesn't my son realize that I could, you know, take those fries away from him right now if I wanted to? Doesn't my son realize I could go up to the counter and I could buy enough fries, I could come back here and bury him in French fries? Doesn't my son realize I don't need his French fries? I only wanted to share some of that with him. And in that moment, Congressman McCune says he realized that how his son was acting towards him is how he oftentimes acted towards God. God blesses us and says, I want to sit down with you and enjoy some of the blessings with you, but we pull back and hold on to what He's given us as if it's ours. And God looks at us and says, don't they realize I'm the source of everything they've got? Don't they realize I have the power to take that away anytime I want? Don't they realize I have the ability to bless them beyond measure? I could bury them in blessings if I wanted to. Don't they realize I don't need anything they have? But I just wanted to share it with them. Don't make the mistake of thinking you can achieve financial freedom on your own and ignore the sovereignty of God. Those are His fries. That is His money in your wallet. That is His car out in the parking lot. That is his house that you're going to go back to after church today. And you might be thinking, I thought this was his house. This is his house. And that is his house. Well, I'm the one paying for the... The money you're using to pay for that house is his money. It is his house. Psalm 24:1 again. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it. The first step on the road to financial freedom is to change our attitude. Acknowledge the sovereignty of God. Who he is. Until we do, nothing else will work. Well, when Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast back in 2005, 9 years ago now, it was indiscriminate in its destruction. Not only did it destroy roads and houses and businesses, it also destroyed churches. And not only did many of those churches suffer from losing their facilities, they also lost multitudes and multitudes of families as they were dispersed around the country trying to find places to live. It would have been easy to become discouraged and to develop a bad attitude filled with bitterness about the situation. But there was at least one church, White Dove Fellowship, that had a different attitude. This was a church of 3,000 people that after the destruction, only 300 people showed up to church that day. And in an emotional message, the pastor, Reverend Mill, he offered a uniquely Christian perspective as to what was going on. As he opened his message, he told his people, "Let us celebrate, for we have successfully planted Christians all over the United States." Well, then in his closing remarks, he noted, "We used to sing that Jesus is all we need, and now we know that Jesus is all we have." What a great attitude. In the midst of a difficult time, a difficult situation, what a great attitude. And we need to get to the place where we can have an attitude like that, that in spite of our circumstances, we celebrate. We say, "God, I'm going to do this your way. I want your wisdom. I want your guidance. I want your blessing on my life. I'm going to do it your way, not my way. I want you to change my life." And if you want God to change your life, whether it be your personal life or your family or your friends or your finances forever, then it begins when you open your mind and allow God to change your attitude. Psalm 84:11 says this, "For the Lord our God is a sun and shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing will he withhold from those whose walk is blameless." Now it didn't say sinless, it said blameless. If it said sinless, we'd be in trouble. But it says blameless, and that means without charge. That means to the best of our ability. We're doing everything we can to obey God and do it His way. If you want financial freedom in your life, we have to change our attitude and do things His way. The Lord bestows favor and honor. No good thing will He withhold from those whose walk is blameless. Let's pray together this morning.